plausible that the entity who'd memory-charmed Hermione was the very same mind that had made use of Bellatrix Black. The two events had a certain signature in common. To choose that this should happen. Plan for this to happen. It would take more than evil. It would take emptiness. Harry looked up for a moment then and saw that the plum-coloured robes were watching. Just watching. Sometime later, after all the stars in the night sky had gone cold and dark, and the last light in the universe had sputtered down to embers and gone black, the questioning of Hermione ended.
"If it pleases my lords,"
said the voice of Lord Malfoy,
"I should like to have the testimony of my son, Draco, witnessed under 2 drops of veritaserum, read aloud at this time."
Until she went after me in that battle, I wasn't plotting anything against Granger. But after that day, I really was feeling insulted. I'd helped her all those times. The sound that came from Hermione's throat was like she'd just been crushed under a falling stone, so huge that she couldn't cry or breathe, just a small, sad gasp.
"Pardon me,"
said one witch from what seemed to be the Malfoy-aligned side of the room.
"But Lord Malfoy, why would your son help this mudblood girl?"
"My son," Lucius Malfoy said in a heavy voice, "seems to have been listening to certain misguided ideas. He is young, and he has learned now, we've all seen as a country, what such folly brings in repayment."
A few steps down along the visitors' benches, a man wearing a newsman's cap and a badge identifying him as belonging to the Daily Prophet was avidly scribbling with a long quill. A few people who'd nodded along to Dumbledore earlier had rather sick looks on their faces. One witch in plum-coloured robes quite deliberately stood up from what had seemed like Dumbledore's side of the room and made her way over toward the Malfoy side. The Auror went on reading, his voice monotone. "I'd been so tired from casting all those locking wards. I was weak when I cast the last one. I thought I was stronger than Granger, but I wasn't certain, so I tested it empirically by challenging her to a duel. That's why I did it, and also because if I'd won, I was planning to beat her again the next day where everyone could see. Stupid veritaserum. But she didn't know about that when she tried to kill me, and I really was insulted by what she'd done. I really had helped her before, and I hadn't been planning anything against her then, only she went after me in front of everyone." When all the witness testimony was done, the deliberations of the Wizengamot began. If you could call them that. It seemed that many members of the Wizengamot were of the strong opinion that murder was bad. The plum-coloured robes on Dumbledore's side of the room were silent, the supposed forces of good saving their political capital for more winnable battles. And Harry could hear, as though Professor Quirrell were standing next to him, a dry voice in his mind, explaining to him that it would hardly have been to the politician's own advantage to speak just then. But there was one wizard in the room whose status was high enough that he had, it seemed, transcended his caution against losing face. One wizard alone whose status was high enough that he could speak a word of sanity and escape unscathed. He alone spoke to defend Hermione. the man with a phoenix flaming bright upon his shoulder. Only Albus Dumbledore spoke. The chief warlock didn't raise the possibility that Hermione Granger was entirely innocent. That, the headmaster had explained to Harry, would not be believed. Would only make it worse. But, Albus Dumbledore said, in one gentle reminder after another, that the perpetrator was a first-year girl in Hogwarts. That many had done foolish things during their youth. That a first year in Hogwarts was simply too young to comprehend the consequences of her acts. He himself, the chief warlock said quietly, had attempted certain foolish things during his childhood, when he was well older than she. Albus Dumbledore said that Hermione Granger had been beloved of all the Hogwarts faculty, and helped 4 Hufflepuff girls with their charms homework, and had scored 103 points for Ravenclaw over the course of the school year. Albus Dumbledore said that nobody who knew Hermione Granger would be anything but shocked by these events, that they had all of them heard the horror in her voice as she recounted her testimony. And if some unusual madness had temporarily possessed her, then, his voice rising in stern command, she deserved nothing from them except sympathy and a healer's attention. And at the last, Albus Dumbledore reminded the Wizengamot, over cries of protest, that the charge was attempted murder, and not murder. Albus Dumbledore said, over a rising storm of objections, that no lasting harm had come to anyone. And Albus Dumbledore begged them not to do worse themselves than anything that had yet been done.
"Enough!"
bellowed Lucius Malfoy, and a show of hands ended the deliberations. The white-maned man stood tall and terrible, his silver cane held high in one hand like a gavel about to fall.
"For what this mad woman has tried to do to my son, for the blood debt that she owes for trying to end the line of a noble and most ancient house, I say that she will."
"Azkaban!"
roared a man with a scarred face, seated at Lord Malfoy's right hand.
"Send the mad mudblood to Azkaban!"
"Azkaban!"
cried another plum-coloured robe. And then another, and another. A click from the rod in Dumbledore's hand silenced the room.
"You are out of order,"
the old wizard said sternly,
"and your proposal is barbaric beneath the dignity of this assembly. There are things we do not do, Lord Malfoy."
Lucius Malfoy had listened to this with an impassive face.
"Well,"
Lord Malfoy said after a few moments. A cold gleam lit his eyes.
"I had not planned to ask it, but if that is the will of the Wizengamot, then let her pay as any in her place would pay. Let it be Azkaban!"
A great cheer of rage went up.
"Are you all lost?"
cried Albus Dumbledore.
"She is too young. Her mind would not withstand it. Not in 3 centuries has such a thing been done in Britain."
"What will the other countries think of us?"
said the sharp voice of a woman that Harry recognized as Neville's grandmother.
"Will you guard Azkaban after she goes there, Lord Malfoy?"
said a stern old witch that Harry didn't know.
"For my orders may decline to guard it, I fear, if small children are kept within. The deliberations are ended,
Lucius Malfoy said coldly.
But if you are incapable of finding orders who can obey the vote of the Wizengamot, Madam Bones, you may relinquish the position. We can easily find another to serve in your place. The will of this hall is clear. For the monstrosity of her crimes, the girl is to be tried as an adult and punished accordingly. 10 years in Azkaban, the justice for attempted murder.
When the old wizard spoke again, his voice was lower.
Is there no alternative to this, Lucius? We may retire to my chambers to discuss it, if need be.
The tall man of the long white hair turned then, to regard where the old wizard stood at the podium, and the two stared at each other for a long moment. When Lucius Malfoy spoke again, his voice seemed to tremble ever so slightly, as though the stern control on it was failing.
Blood calls for repayment. The blood of my family. Not for any price will I sell the blood debt owed to my son. You would not understand that, who never had love or child of your own. Still, there is more than one debt owed to House Malfoy, and I think that my son, if he stood among us, would rather be repaid for his mother's blood than for his own. Confess your own crime to the Wizengamot, as you confessed it to me, and I shall. Don't even think about it, Albus,
said the stern old witch who had spoken before. The old wizard stood at the podium. The old wizard stood at the podium, his face twisting, untwisting.
"Stop it," said the old witch. "You know the answer you must give, Albus. It will not change for agonizing over it."
The old wizard spoke.
"No,"
said Albus Dumbledore.
"And you, Malfoy,"
continued the stern old witch.
"I suppose all you really wanted this whole time was to ruin." "Hardly,"
said Lucius Malfoy, his lips now twisting into a bitter smile.
"No, I have no purpose here but my son's vengeance. I only wished to show the Wizengamot the truth behind this old man's pretended heroism, and his praise of that girl. That he would hardly think of sacrificing himself to save her."
"Cruelty worthy of a Death-Eater indeed,"
said Augusta Longbottom.
"Not that I am implying anything, of course."
"Cruelty,"
said Lucius Malfoy, the bitter smile still on his face.
"I think not. I knew what his answer would be. I have ever warned you that he only plays his pretended part. If you believe in his hesitation, the more fool you. Remember that his answer was the same."
The man raised his voice.
"Let us vote, my friends. I think a show of hands will suffice for it. I do not imagine there will be many who choose to align themselves with murderers."
The voice went cold on the last note, the promise in it very clear.
"Look at the girl," said Albus Dumbledore. "See her. See the horror you are committing. She is..."
The old wizard's voice broke.
She is afraid.
The Verity serum must have been wearing off, because Hermione Granger's face was twisting beneath the slackness, her limbs trembling visibly beneath the chains, as though she were trying to run from that chair, but was pressed down by weights larger than the enchanted metal links that bound her. Then there was a convulsive effort, and Hermione's neck moved, her head twisted, enough to bring her eyes into line. She looked at Harry Potter, and though she didn't speak, it was absolutely clear what she was saying.
"Harry, help me, please."
And in the most ancient hall of the Wizengamot, an icy voice rang out. Speech, the colour of liquid nitrogen, pitched too high for that it came from too young a throat, and that voice said,
"Lucius Malfoy!"
In the ancient and hallowed halls of the Wizengamot, people looked around, and it took their eyes too long to find what they sought. It might have been high in pitch, it might have been under-loud for the words being spoken, and yet even so, you wouldn't have expected to hear that voice from a child. It wasn't until Lord Malfoy spoke in return that people even realized where they should be looking.
"Harry Potter,"
said Lucius Malfoy. He did not incline his head. Heads spun, eyes moved, and people focused on the messy-haired young boy standing near the weeping older witch. The boy stood merely chest-high with his shoes on, dressed in short robes of formal black. Though, unless your eyes were keen indeed, you couldn't have seen, from all the way across the hall, that famous and deadly scar beneath his messy hair.
"This folly does not become you, Lucius," said the boy. 12-year-old girls do not go around committing murders. You are a Slytherin, and an intelligent one. You know this is a plot. Hermione Granger was placed on this game board by force, by whatever hand lies behind that plot. You were surely intended to act just as you are acting now, except that Draco Malfoy was meant to be dead, and you were meant to be beyond all reason. But he is alive, and you are sane. Why are you cooperating with your intended role in a plot meant to take the life of your son?"
A storm seemed to be raging inside Lucius, the face beneath the flowing white hair threatening to crack open and spill something unguessable. The Lord of Malfoy seemed to almost speak once, and then twice again, swallowing 3 unheard sentences before his lips parted for true.
"A plot, you say?"
Lord Malfoy said at last. His face was twitching, hardly controlled.
"And whose plot would that be, then?" "If I knew," said the boy, "I would have said so a good deal earlier. But anyone who had ever been Hermione Granger's classmate could tell you that she is a most unlikely murderess. She does, in fact, help Hufflepuffs with their homework. This was not a natural event, Lord Malfoy."
"Plot or no plot?"
Lucius's voice was trembling.
"This mudblood filth has touched my son, and for that I will end her. You should know that full well, Harry Potter." "It is questionable," the boy said, "to put it mildly, whether Hermione Granger actually cast that blood-cooling charm. I do not know the exact circumstances or what spells were involved,
but simple trickery would not have sufficed to make her do it. She did not act of her own will, and perhaps did not act at all. Your vengeance is being misdirected, Lord Malfoy, and deliberately so. It is not a 12-year-old girl who deserves your ire.
And what do you care for her fate?
Lucius Malfoy's voice was rising.
What is your stake in this?
She is my friend,
the boy said.
As Draco is my friend. It is possible that this blow was aimed at me, and not at House Malfoy at all.
Again the muscles jumped in Lucius's face.
And now you are lying to me, as you lied to my son.
Believe it or not,
the boy said quietly,
I never willed anything but that Draco should know the truth.
Enough!
Cried the Lord Malfoy.
Enough of your lies! Enough of your games! You do not understand. You would never understand what it means that he is my son. I will not be denied this vengeance. No more! Never again! For the blood this girl owes, House Malfoy, she shall go to Azkaban! And if I ever find another hand at work, even if it is your own, that hand shall be cut off as well.
Lucius Malfoy raised his deadly silver cane as though in command, his teeth clenched and his lips drawn back in a snarl, like a wolf facing a dragon.
And if you have nothing better to say than that, be silent, Harry Potter.
Harry's blood was hammering even beneath the ice of his dark side. The fear for Hermione, the part of him that wanted to lash out at Lucius and destroy him where he stood for his insolence and his stupidity. But Harry didn't have the power. He didn't even have a single vote in the Wizengamot. Draco had said that Lucius was scared of him, for some unknown reason, and Harry could see it in the rictus that Lord Malfoy's face had become, drawn and tight, that it was taking all his courage for him to tell Harry to shut up. So, Harry said, his voice cool and deadly, hoping to hell that it meant something,
"You will earn my enmity if you do this, Lucius."
Someone in the lower rows of what was evidently the blood-purist side of the Wizengamot, who was looking down at the young boy rather than up at Lord Malfoy, laughed in outright incredulity. Other plum-coloured robes began to laugh as well. Lord Malfoy gazed at him with hard dignity as that laughter spread.
If you want the enmity of House Malfoy, you shall have it, child.
Now, really,
said the woman in too much pink makeup,
I think this has gone on quite long enough, wouldn't you say, Lord Malfoy? The boy will miss his classes.
Indeed he will,
said Lucius Malfoy, and then raised his voice again.
I call the vote. By show of hands, let the Wizengamot acknowledge the blood debt owed to the noble and most ancient House of Malfoy, for the attempted murder of its last scion and ending of its line by Hermione, the first Granger.
Hands shot up one after another, and the secretary who sat at the bottom circle began to make marks on parchment to tally them, but it was obvious which way the majority had gone. And Harry screamed inside his mind, a frantic call for help to any part of himself that would offer a way out, a strategy, an idea. But there was nothing. There was nothing. It played his last cards and lost. And then, with a last convulsive desperation, Harry plunged himself into his dark side, pushed himself into his dark side, seizing at its deadly clarity, offering his dark side anything if it would only solve this problem for him. And at last, the lethal calm came over him. The true ice finally answering his call. Beyond all panic and despair, his mind began to search through every fact in its possession, recall everything it knew about Lucius Malfoy, about the Wizengamot, about the laws of magical Britain. His eyes looked at the rows of chairs, at every person and everything within range of his vision, searching for any opportunity it could grasp. Chapter 81 Taboo Trade-Offs, Part 3 In rising half-circles of dark stone, a great sea of upraised hands. The lords and ladies of the Wizengamot, in plum-coloured robes, marked with a silver W, stared down in stern rebuke at a young girl trembling in chains. If they had, in any particular ethical system, damned themselves, they clearly thought quite highly of themselves for having done so. Harry's breath was trembling in his chest. His dark side had come up with a plan, and then rotated itself back out again because speaking too icily would have not been to Hermione's advantage, a fact which the only half-cold Harry had somehow not realized. "The vote carries in favor," intoned the secretary when all the tallying was done and the upraised hands fell back down. "The Wizengamot recognizes the blood debt owed by Hermione Granger to House Malfoy for the attempted murder of its scion and ending of its line." Lucius Malfoy was smiling in grim satisfaction.
"And now," said the white-maned wizard, "I say that her debt shall be paid."
Harry clenched his fists beneath the bench and shouted,
"By the debt owed from House Malfoy to House Potter!"
"Silence!"
snapped the woman in too much pink makeup sitting next to Minister Fudge.
"You've disrupted these proceedings quite enough already. Horace, escort him out."
"Wait,"
said Augusta Longbottom from the top tier of seats.
"What debt is this?"
Lucius's hands whitened on his cane.
"House Malfoy owes no debt to you."
It wasn't the world's most solid hope. It was based on one newspaper article from a woman who'd been false memory charmed, but Rita Skeeter had seemed to find it plausible that Mr. Weasley had allegedly owed James Potter a debt because...
"I'm surprised you've forgotten," Harry said evenly. "Surely it was a cruel and painful period of your life, labouring under the imperious curse of he who must not be named, until you were freed of it by the efforts of House Potter. By my mother, Lily Potter, who died for it, and by my father, James Potter, who died for it, and by me, of course."
There was a brief silence within the most ancient hall.
"Why, what an excellent point, Mr. Potter,"
said the old witch who'd been identified as Madam Bones.
"I, too, am quite surprised that Lord Malfoy would forget such a significant event. It must have been such a happy day for him."
"Yes,"
said Augusta Longbottom.
"He must have been so grateful."
Madam Bones nodded.
"House Malfoy could not possibly deny that debt, unless, perhaps, Lord Malfoy is to tell us that he has misremembered something. I should take quite a professional interest in that. We are always trying to improve our picture of those dark days."
Lucius Malfoy's hands gripped the silver snake handle of his cane like he was about to strike with it, unleash whatever power it kept. Then, the Lord Malfoy seemed to relax, and a chill smile came over his face.
"Of course,"
he said easily.
"I do confess I had not understood, but the child is quite correct. But I do not think the two debts cancel. House Potter was only trying to save itself, after all."
"Not so," Dumbledore said from above.
"And therefore,"
intoned Lucius Malfoy,
"I demand monetary compensation as well for the redemption of the blood debt owed my son. That, too, is the law."
Harry felt a strange inward flinch. That had also been in the newspaper article. Mr. Weasley had demanded an additional 10,000 galleons.
"How much?"
said the boy who lived. Lucius was still wearing the cold smile.
100,000 galleons. If you have not that much in your vault, I suppose I must accept a promissory note for the remainder."
A roar of protest went up from Dumbledore's side of the room. Even some of the plum-coloured robes in the middle looked shocked.
"Shall we put it to the vote of the Wizengamot?"
said Lucius Malfoy.
"I think few of us would like to see the little murderess go free. By a show of hands, that additional compensation of 100,000 galleons would be required to cancel the debt."
The clerk began tallying, but that vote was also clear. Harry stood there, breathing deeply.
"You'd better not even have to think about this,"
Harry's inner Gryffindor said threateningly.
"It's a major purchase,"
observed Ravenclaw.
"We ought to spend a lot of time thinking about it."
It shouldn't have been hard. It shouldn't have. £2 million was only money, and money was only worth what it could buy. It was strange how much psychological attachment you could have to only money, or how painful it could be to imagine losing a bank vault full of gold that you hadn't even imagined existed just 1 year earlier.
"Kimble Kinnison wouldn't hesitate," said Gryffindor. "Seriously, like, snap decision. What sort of hero are you? I already hate you just for having to think about it for longer than 50 milliseconds. "This is real life," said Ravenclaw. "Losing all your money is a lot more painful for real people in real life than in heroic books."
"What?"
demanded Gryffindor.
"Whose side are you on?" "I wasn't advocating for a particular answer," said Ravenclaw. "I was just saying it because it was true. Could 100,000 galleons be used to save more than one life if spent some other way?"
said Slytherin.
"We have research to do, battles to fight. The difference between being 40,000 galleons rich and being 60,000 galleons in debt is not trivial. So, we'll just use one of our ways to make money fast and earn it all back,"
said Hufflepuff.
"It's not certain those will work,"
said Slytherin,
"and a lot of them require starting cash. Personally," said Gryffindor, "I vote that we save Hermione and then gang up and kill our inner Slytherin."
The clerk's voice said that the tally had been recorded and the vote had passed. Harry's lips opened.
"I accept your offer,"
said Harry's lips without any hesitation, without any decision having been made, just as if the internal debate had been pretense and illusion, the true controller of the voice having been no part of it. Lucius Malfoy's mask of calm shattered. His eyes widened. He stared at Harry in sheer blank astonishment. His mouth had opened slightly, though he wasn't speaking, and if he was making any peculiar noises, it couldn't be heard over the roar of simultaneous gasps from the Wizengamot. A tap of stone silenced the crowd.
"No,"
said the voice of Dumbledore. Harry's head jerked around to stare at the ancient wizard. Dumbledore's lined face was pale. The silver beard was visibly trembling. He looked like he was in the final throes of a terminal illness.
"I'm sorry, Harry, but this choice is not yours, for I am still the guardian of your vault."
"What?"
said Harry, too shocked to compose his reply.
"I cannot let you go into debt to Lucius Malfoy, Harry. I cannot. You do not know. You do not realize."
"Die!"
Harry didn't even know which part of himself had spoken. It might have been a unanimous vote, the pure rage and fury pouring through him. For an instant, he thought that the sheer force of the anger might take magical wing and fly out to strike the headmaster, send him tumbling back dead from the podium. But when that mental voice had spoken, the old wizard was still standing there, gazing at Harry, long dark wand in his right hand, short black rod in his left. And Harry's eyes also went to the red golden bird with its claws resting on the shoulder of Dumbledore's black robes. Silent, when no phoenix should have been silent.
"Forks,"
Harry said, his voice sounding strange in his own ears.
"Can you scream at him for me?"
The fiery bird on the old wizard's shoulder didn't scream. Maybe the Wizengamot had demanded that a spell of silence be put on the creature. Otherwise, it probably would have been screaming the whole time. But Forks hit his master, one golden wing buffeting the old wizard's head.
"I cannot, Harry,"
the old wizard said, the agony clear in his voice.
"I am doing as I must do."
And Harry knew then, as he looked at the red golden bird, what he had to do as well. It should have been obvious from the beginning, that solution.
"Then I too will do what I must,"
Harry said up to Dumbledore, as though the two of them stood alone in the room.
"You do realize that, don't you?"
The old wizard shook his trembling head.
"You will change your mind when you are older."
"I'm not talking about that,"
Harry said, his voice still strange in his own ears.
"I mean that I will not allow Hermione Granger to be eaten by Dementors under any circumstance. Period. Regardless of what any law says, and no matter what I have to do to stop it. Do I still need to spell it out?"
A strange male voice spoke from somewhere far away.
Be sure that girl is taken directly to Azkaban and put under extra guard.
Harry waited, staring at the old wizard, and then spoke again.
I will go to Azkaban,
Harry said to the old wizard as though they stood alone in the world.
Before Hermione can be taken there, and start snapping my fingers. It may cost me my life, but by the time she gets there, there won't be an Azkaban anymore.
Some members of the Wizengamot gasped in surprise. Then a greater number started laughing.
How would you even get there, little boy?
Someone said from among those who were laughing.
I have my ways of going places, said the boy's distant voice.
Harry kept his eyes on Dumbledore, on the old wizard staring at him in shock. Harry didn't look directly at Fawkes, didn't give his plan away, but in his mind he prepared to summon the phoenix to transport him, prepared to fill his mind with light and fury, to call for the Firebird with all his might. He might have to do it upon the instant if Dumbledore pointed his wand.
Would you truly?
The old wizard said to Harry, also as if the two of them stood alone in the room. The room went silent again as everyone stared in shock at the chief warlock of the Wizengamot, who seemed to be taking the mad threat completely seriously. The old wizard's eyes were locked only on Harry.
Would you risk everything? Everything? Only for her?
Yes,
Harry said back in reply.
That's the wrong answer, you know, said Slytherin. Seriously. But it's the true answer.
You will not see reason,
said the old wizard.
Apparently not, Harry said back.
The gazes stayed locked.
This is terrible folly, said the old wizard.
I am aware of this, answered the hero. Now, get out of my way.
Strange light glinted in the ancient blue eyes.
As you will, Harry Potter, but know that this is not over.
The rest of the world faded back into existence.
I withdraw my objection, said the old wizard. Harry Potter may do as he wishes.
And the Wizengamot exploded in a roar of shock, only to be silenced by a final tap of the stone rod. Harry turned his head back to look at Lord Malfoy, who looked like he'd seen a cat turn into a person and start eating other cats. To call the look confused did not begin to describe it.
You would truly,
Lucius Malfoy said slowly,
you would truly pay 100,000 galleons to save one mudblood girl?
I think there's about 40,000 in my Gringotts vault,
Harry said. It was strange how that was still causing more internal pain than the thought of taking an over 50% risk to his life to destroy Azkaban.
As for the other 60,000, what are the rules exactly?
It comes due when you graduate Hogwarts,
the old wizard said from high above.
But Lord Malfoy has certain rights over you before then, I fear.
Lucius Malfoy stood motionless, frowning down at Harry.
"Who is she to you, then? What is she to you, that you would pay so much to keep her from harm?"
"My friend," the boy said quietly.
Lucius Malfoy's eyes narrowed.
"By the report I received, you cannot cast the Patronus charm, and Dumbledore knows this. The power of a single Dementor nearly killed you. You would not dare venture near Azkaban in your own person."
"That was in January," said Harry. "This is April."
Lucius Malfoy's eyes remained cool and calculating.
"You pretend you can destroy Azkaban, and Dumbledore pretends to believe it."
Harry did not reply. The white-haired man turned slightly toward the center of the half-circle as though to address the greater Wizengamot.
"I withdraw my offer," shouted the Lord of Malfoy. "I will not accept the debt to House Potter in payment, not even for 100,000 galleons. The girl's blood debt to House Malfoy stands."
Again the roar of many voices.
"Dishonorable!" someone cried. "You acknowledged the debt to House Potter, and yet you would—"
And then that voice cut off.
"I acknowledge the debt, but the law does not strictly oblige me to accept it in cancellation,"
said Lord Malfoy with a grim smile.
"The girl is no part of House Potter. The debt I owe House Potter is no debt to her. As for the dishonor—"
Lucius Malfoy paused.
"As for the grave shame I feel at my ingratitude toward the Potters, who have done so much for me—"
Lucius Malfoy bowed his head.
"May my ancestors forgive me."
"Well, boy," called the scarred man sitting at Lord Malfoy's right, "go and destroy Azkaban, then."
"I'd like to see that," said another voice. "Will you be selling tickets?"
It went without saying that Harry didn't pick this particular moment to give up. The girl is no part of House Potter. He had, in fact, seen the obvious way out of the dilemma almost instantly. It might have taken him longer if he hadn't recently overheard a number of conversations between older Ravenclaw girls and read a certain number of Quibbler stories. He was, nonetheless, having trouble accepting it.
"This is ridiculous,"
said a part of Harry which had just dubbed itself the internal consistency checker.
"Our actions here are completely incoherent. First, you feel less emotional reluctance to risk your bloody life and probably die for Hermione than to part with a stupid heap of gold. And now you're balking just at getting married?"
"System error."
"You know what,"
said internal consistency checker,
"you're stupid."
"I didn't say no,"
thought Harry.
"I was just saying system error."
"I vote for destroying Azkaban," said Gryffindor.
"It needs to be done anyway."
"Really, really stupid,"
said internal consistency checker.
"Oh, screw this. I'm assuming control of our body."
The boy took a deep breath and opened his mouth. By this point, Harry Potter had entirely forgotten the existence of Professor McGonagall, who had been sitting there this whole time, undergoing a number of interesting changes of facial expression, which Harry had not been looking at because he was distracted. It would have been overly harsh to say that Harry had forgotten her because he did not consider her a PC. It could be more kindly said that Professor McGonagall was not visibly a solution to any of his current problems, and therefore she was not part of the universe. So Harry, who at this point had a fair amount of adrenaline in his bloodstream, startled and jumped quite visibly when Professor McGonagall, her eyes now blazing with impossible hope and the tears on her cheek half-dried, leapt to her feet and cried,
"With me, Mr. Potter!"
And, without waiting for a reply, tore down the stairs that led to the bottom platform where waited a chair of dark metal. It took a moment, but Harry ran after, though it took him longer to reach the bottom after Professor McGonagall vaulted half the stairs with a strange cat-like motion and landed with the astonished-looking aura trio already pointing their wands at her.
"Miss Granger," cried Professor McGonagall, "can you speak yet?"
Much as with Professor McGonagall, there was a certain sense in which it could be said that Harry had forgotten about the existence of Hermione Granger, because Harry had been tilting his neck back to look upward rather than downward, and because he hadn't considered her a solution to any of his current problems. Though it was hardly certain, in fact it wasn't at all probable, that Harry remembering to look at Hermione, or think about what she must be feeling, would have helped anything in the slightest. Harry reached the bottom of the stairs and saw Hermione Granger full on. Without thinking, without being able to help himself, Harry shut his eyes. But he had seen. Her school robes around her neck, soaked all the way through with tears. The way she had been looking away from him. And the eye of memory and sympathy, which could not be shut, which could not look away, knew that Hermione had just recounted the worst shame of her life in front of the nobility of magical Britain and Professor McGonagall, and Dumbledore, and Harry, and then been sentenced to Azkaban, where she would be exposed to darkness and cold and all her worst memories until she went mad and died. And then she had heard that Harry was going to give away all his money and go into debt to save her, and maybe even sacrifice his life. And, with the Dementor standing only a few paces behind her, she hadn't said anything.
"Yes,"
whispered the voice of Hermione Granger.
"I can talk."
Harry opened his eyes again and saw her face, now looking at him. It didn't say anything like what he thought Hermione was feeling. Faces couldn't say anything that complicated. All facial muscles could do was contort themselves into knots.
"Harry, I'm so...
"Shut up," Harry suggested.
"Sorry?
If you'd never met me on the train, you wouldn't be in any trouble right now, so shut up," said Harry Potter.
"Both of you, stop being silly,"
Professor McGonagall said in her firm Scottish accent. It was strange how much that helped.
"Mr. Potter, hold out your wand so that Miss Granger's fingers can touch it. Miss Granger, repeat after me. Upon my life and magic."
Harry did as he was bid, thrusting his wand forward to touch Hermione's fingers, and then Hermione's faltering voice said,
"Upon my life and magic."
"I swear service to the House of Potter,"
said Professor McGonagall. And Hermione, without waiting for any further instructions, said, the words spilling out of her in a rush,
"I swear service to the House of Potter, to obey its master or mistress, and stand at their right hand, and fight at their command, and follow where they go until the day I die."
All those words had been blurted out in a desperate gasp before Harry could have thought or said anything, if he'd been mad enough to interrupt.
"Mr. Potter, repeat these words,"
said Professor McGonagall.
"I, Harry, heir and last scion of the Potters, accept your service until the end of the world and its magic."
Harry took a breath and said,
"I, Harry, heir and last scion of the Potters, accept your service until the end of the world and its magic."
"That's it," said Professor McGonagall. "Well done."
Harry looked up and saw the entire Wizengamot, whose existence he had forgotten, was staring at them. And then Minerva McGonagall, who was head of House Gryffindor, even if she didn't always act like it, looked up high above at where Lucius Malfoy stood, and she said to him before the entire Wizengamot,
"I regret every point I ever gave you in Transfiguration, you vile little worm."
Whatever Lucius was about to say in reply was silenced by a tap of the short rod in Dumbledore's hand.
"Ahem!"
said the old wizard from his podium of dark stone.
"This session has carried on quite considerably, and if it is not dismissed soon, some of us may miss their entire luncheon. The law of this matter is clear. You have already voted on the terms of the bargain, and Lord Malfoy cannot legally decline it. As we have far exceeded our allotted time, I now, in accordance with the last decision of the survivors of the 88th Wizengamot, adjourn this session."
The old wizard tapped the rod of dark stone 3 times.
"You fools!"
shouted Lucius Malfoy. The white hair was shaking as though in a wind. The face beneath was pale with fury.
"Do you think you'll get away with what you've done today? Do you think that girl will try to murder my son and escape unscathed?"
The toad-like pink makeup woman, whose name Harry could no longer remember, was standing up from her seat.
"Why, of course not,"
she said with a sickening smile.
"After all, the girl is still a murderess, and I think the Ministry shall be watching our affairs quite closely. It hardly seems wise that she should be allowed to wander the streets after all."
Harry was fed up at this point. Without waiting to listen, Harry turned on his heel and strode forward in long steps toward the horror only he could truly see, the absence of colour and space, the wound in the world, above which floated a tattered cloak, most imperfectly guarded by a running moonlit squirrel and a fluttering silver sparrow. His dark side had also noticed, when it was looking through the entire room for anything that could possibly be used as a weapon, that the enemy had been foolish enough to bring a Dementor into Harry's presence. That was a powerful weapon indeed, and one that Harry might wield better than its supposed masters. There had been a time in Azkaban when Harry had told 12 Dementors to turn and go, and they had gone.
The Dementors are death, and the Patronus charm works by thinking about happy thoughts instead of death.
If Harry's theory was correct, that one sentence would be all it took to pop the Aura's Patronus charms like a soap bubble and ensure that nobody within reach of his voice could cast another one.
I'm going to cancel the Patronus charms and prevent any more Patronuses from being cast. And then my Dementor, flying faster than any broomstick, is going to kiss everyone here who voted to send a 12-year-old girl to Azkaban.
Say that to set up the if-then expectation and wait for people to understand and laugh. Then speak the fatal truth, and when the Aura's Patronuses winked out to prove the point, either people's anticipations of the mindless void, or Harry's threat of its destruction, would make the Dementor obey. Those who had sought to compromise with the darkness would be consumed by it. It was the other solution his dark side had devised. Ignoring the gasps rising from behind him, Harry crossed the radius of the Patronuses, strode to a single pace from death. Its unhindered fear burst around him like a whirlpool, like stepping next to the sucking drain of some huge bathtub emptying out its water. But with the false Patronuses no longer obscuring the level on which they interacted, Harry could reach the Dementor even as it could reach him. Harry looked straight into the pulling vacuum and...
The Earth among the stars.
All his triumph at saving Hermione.
Someday, the reality of which you are a shadow will cease to exist.
Harry took all the silver emotion that fueled his Patronus charm and shoved it at the Dementor, and expected Death's shadow to flee from him. And, as Harry did that, he flung his hands up and shouted,
"Boo!"
The void retreated sharply away from Harry until it came up against the dark stone behind. In the hall, there was a deathly silence. Harry turned his back on the empty void and looked up at where the Toad Woman stood. She was pale beneath the pink makeup, her mouth opening and closing like a fish.
"I make you this one offer," said the boy who lived. "I never learn that you've been interfering with me or any of mine, and you never find out why the unkillable, soul-eating monster is scared of me. Now sit down and shut up!"
The Toad Woman fell back down to her bench without a word. Harry looked further up.
"A riddle, Lord Malfoy,"
the boy who lived shouted across the most ancient hall.
"I know you weren't in Ravenclaw, but try to answer this one anyway. What destroys Dark Lords, frightens Dementors, and owes you 60,000 galleons?"
For an instant, Lord Malfoy stood there with eyes slightly widened. Then his face fell back into calm scorn, and his voice spoke coolly in reply.
"Are you openly threatening me, Mr. Potter?"
"I'm not threatening you," said the boy who lived. "I'm scaring you. There's a difference."
"Enough, Mr. Potter," said Professor McGonagall. "We shall be late for afternoon transfiguration as it is,
And do come back here. You're still terrifying that poor Dementor.
She turned to the Aurors.
Mr. Kleiner, if you would...
Harry strode back to them as the aura addressed moved forward and pressed a short rod of dark metal to the dark metal chair, muttering an inaudible word of dismissal. The chains slithered back as smoothly as they had come forth, and Hermione pushed herself out of the chair as fast as she could, and half ran and half staggered forward a few steps. Harry held out his arms, and Hermione half jumped, half fell into Professor McGonagall's arms, beginning to sob hysterically.
"Huh," said a voice inside Harry.
"I kind of thought we'd earned that one ourselves." "Oh, shut up!"
Professor McGonagall was holding Hermione so firmly that you might have thought it was a mother holding her daughter, or maybe a granddaughter. After a few moments, Hermione's sobs slowed, and then stopped. Professor McGonagall suddenly shifted her stance and grabbed onto her more tightly. The girl's hands were dangling limply now, and her eyes were closed.
"She'll be fine, Mr. Potter,"
Professor McGonagall said softly in Harry's direction, without looking at him.
"She just needs a few hours in one of Madame Pomfrey's beds."
"All right, then," Harry said. "Let's get her to Madame Pomfrey's."
"Yes,"
said Dumbledore as he descended to the bottom of the dark stone stairs.
"Let us all go home, indeed."
His blue eyes were locked on Harry, as hard as sapphires. The lords and ladies of the Wizengamot are departing their wooden benches, leaving as they came, looking rather nervous. The vast majority are thinking, "The Dementor was frightened of the boy who lived?" Some of the shrewder ones are already wondering how this will affect the delicate power balance of the Wizengamot, if a new piece has appeared upon the game board. Almost none are thinking anything along the lines of, "I wonder how he did that." This is the truth of the Wizengamot. Many are nobles. Many are wealthy magnates of business. A few came by their status in other ways. Some of them are stupid. Most are shrewd in the realms of business and politics, but their shrewdness is circumscribed. Almost none have walked the path of a powerful wizard. They have not read through ancient books, scrutinized old scrolls, searched for truths too powerful to walk openly and disguised in conundrums, hunting for true magic among 100 fantastic fairy tales. When they are not looking at a contract of debt, they abandon what shrewdness they possess and relax with some comfortable nonsense. They believe in the Deathly Hallows, but they also believe that Merlin fought the dread Totoro and imprisoned the Ree. They know, because that too is part of the standard legend, that a powerful wizard must learn to distinguish the truth among 100 plausible lies, but it has not occurred to them that they might do the same. Why not? Why, indeed, would wizards with enough status and wealth to turn their heads to almost any endeavour choose to spend their lives fighting over lucrative monopolies on ink importation? The headmaster of Hogwarts would hardly see the question. Of course, most people should not be powerful wizards, just as most people should not be heroes. The defense professor could explain at great and cynical length why their ambitions are so trivial. To him, too, there is no puzzle. Only Harry Potter, for all the books he has read, is unable to understand.
To the boy who lived, the life choices of the lords and ladies seem incomprehensible. Not what a good person would do, nor yet an evil person either. Now, which of the three is most wise? For whatever reason, then, most of the Wizengamot has never walked the path that leads to powerful wizardry. They do not seek out what is hidden. For them, there is no why. There is no explanation. There is no causality. The boy who lived, who was already halfway into the magisterium of legend, has now been promoted all the way there. And it is a brute fact, simple and unexplained, that the boy who lived frightens Dementors. 10 years earlier, they were told that a 1-year-old boy defeated the most terrible Dark Lord of their generation, perhaps the most evil Dark Lord ever to live, and they just accepted that too. You're not meant to question that sort of thing. They know in some unspoken way. If the most terrible Dark Lord in history confronts an innocent baby, why, how could he not be vanquished? The rhythm of the play demands it. You're supposed to applaud, not stand up from your seat in the audience and say, "Why?" It's just the story's conceit that in the end, the Dark Lord is brought down by a little child. And if you're going to question that, you might as well not attend the play in the first place. It does not occur to them to second-guess the application of such reasoning to the events they have seen with their own eyes in the most ancient hall. Indeed, they are not consciously aware that they are using story reasoning on real life. As for scrutinizing the boy who lived with the same careful logic they would use on a political alliance or a business arrangement, what brain would associate to that when a part of the legendary magisterium is at hand? But there are a very few, seated on those wooden benches, who do not think like this. There are a certain few of the Wizengamot who have read through half-disintegrated scrolls and listened to tales of things that happened to someone's brother's cousin, not for entertainment, but as part of a quest for power and truth. They have already marked the Knight of Godric's Hollow, as reported by Albus Dumbledore, as an anomalous and potentially important event. They have wondered why it happened, if it did happen, or if not, why Dumbledore is lying. And when an 11-year-old boy rises up and says, "Lucius Malfoy," in that cold adult voice, and goes on to speak words one simply would not expect to hear from a first year in Hogwarts, they do not allow the fact to slip into the lawless blurs of legends and the premises of plays. They mark it as a clue. They add it to the list. This list is beginning to look somewhat alarming. It doesn't particularly help when the boy yells, "Boo!" at a Dementor, and the decaying corpse presses itself flat against the opposite wall and its horrible, ear-hurting voice rasps, "Make him go away!" Chapter 82. Taboo Trade-Offs. Final. Phoenix travel was a sensation entirely unlike apparition or portkeys. You caught on fire. You definitely felt yourself catching on fire, even though there was no pain, and instead of burning to ashes, the fire burned all the way through you, and you became fire. and then you went out in one place and blazed up in another. It didn't sicken the stomach like portkeys or apparition, but it was a rather unnerving experience nonetheless. If the underlying truth of phoenix travel really was becoming a specific instantiation of a more general fire, then that seemed to hint you could potentially burn anywhere, even in the distant past, or in another universe, or in two places at once. You might go out in one place and blaze up in 100 others, and the you who arrived at Hogwarts would never know the difference. Though Harry had read what he could about phoenixes, trying to figure out how to get one of his own, and there'd be no hint of anything remotely like that capability. Harry caught fire and went out and blazed up somewhere else. And just like that, he and the headmaster and the unconscious form of Hermione Granger held in the headmaster's arms were occupying another place, with forks above them all. A calm, warm room of bright stone columns, skylit on all four sides, populated by white beds in long rows, four of which had silencing veils drawn around them, and the rest empty. In one corner of Harry's vision, a surprised-looking Madame Pomfrey was turning toward them. Dumbledore seemed to pay the senior healer no heed, as he carefully laid down Hermione on an unoccupied white bed. From a distant corner there was a flash of green, and from out of a fireplace strode Professor McGonagall, brushing herself off slightly from the flue ashes. The old wizard turned from the bed and reached one of his arms around Harry again, and then the boy who lived and his wizard vanished in another burst of fire. When Harry had fully lit up again, he was standing in the headmaster's office, amid the noises of a dozen inexplicable gidgets. The young boy took a step away from the old wizard and then turned on him, emerald and sapphire eyes meeting. The two of them did not speak for a time, looking at each other, as though all they had to speak could be said only by stares, and not said in any other way. In time, the boy enunciated words slowly and precisely.
"I cannot believe that a phoenix is still upon your shoulder."
"The phoenix chooses but once," said the old wizard. "They might perhaps leave a master who chooses evil over good. They will not leave a master forced to choose between one good and another. Phoenixes are not so arrogant. They know the limits of their own wisdom."
Stern indeed, that ancient gaze.
"Unlike you, Harry."
"Choose between one good and another?"
Harry echoed flatly.
"Like Hermione Granger's life versus 100,000 galleons?"
The rage and indignation Harry wanted to put into his voice wasn't quite there for some reason. Maybe because...
"You are hardly in a position to speak to me of that, Harry Potter."
The headmaster's voice was deceptively soft.
"Oh, what was that look of reluctance that I saw upon your face there, in the most ancient hall?"
The sense of inward hollowness grew worse.
"I was looking for other alternatives," Harry bit out. "Some way to save her that didn't lose the money."
"Wow," said Ravenclaw.
"You just told an outright lie. Not only that, I think you actually believed it for the seconds it took to say it. That's kinda scary."
Is that what you were thinking, Harry?
The blue eyes were keen, and there was a terrifying moment when Harry wondered if the world's most powerful wizard could see right past his occlumency barriers.
Yes, Harry said. I flinched away from the pain of losing all the money in my vault. But I did it. That's what counts. And you...
The indignation that had faltered out of Harry's voice returned.
You actually put a price on Hermione Granger's life, and you put it below 100,000 galleons!
Oh,
the old wizard said softly.
And what price did you put on her life, then? 1,000,000 galleons?
Are you familiar with the economic concept of replacement value?
The words were spilling from Harry's lips almost faster than he could consider them.
Hermione's replacement value is infinite. There's nowhere I can go to buy another one.
Now you're just talking mathematical nonsense, said Slytherin. Ravenclaw, back me up here.
Is Minerva's life also of infinite worth?
The old wizard said harshly.
Would you sacrifice Minerva to save Hermione?
Yes, and yes,
Harry snapped.
That's part of Professor McGonagall's job, and she knows it.
Then Minerva's value is not infinite, said the old wizard. For all that she is loved, there can only be one king upon a chessboard, Harry Potter. Only one piece that you will sacrifice any other piece to save. And Hermione Granger is not that piece. Make no mistake, Harry Potter. This day you may well have lost your war.
And if the old wizard's words hadn't hit quite so hard, and quite so close to home, Harry might not have said what he said then.
Lucius was right, Harry ground out.
You never had a wife. You never had a daughter. You've never had anything but war.
The old wizard's left hand closed hard upon Harry's wrist, bony fingers digging into the still-developing muscle of Harry's arm, and for a moment Harry was paralyzed with the shock of it. He had forgotten what it meant that adults were stronger. Albus Dumbledore did not seem to notice. He only turned, dragging Harry with him, and moved forward in hard steps toward the wall of the room.
Phoenix's price!
Harry was pulled up along the blank stairs.
Phoenix's fate!
The room of black pedestals, silver light falling on shattered wands.
You think,
yelled Harry after his lips unlocked,
that you can win any argument just by standing here?
The old wizard ignored him, dragging Harry across the room. His right hand, no longer holding his wand, grabbed up a vial of silver fluid. Harry blinked in shock. The vial of silver fluid had been standing next to a picture of Dumbledore. Or so it had appeared to Harry in the brief moment before he was dragged past. Past the end of all the pedestals, at the farthest part of the room, rose a great stone basin with runes carved into it that Harry didn't recognize. The center was a shallow depression filled with transparent liquid, and into this the old wizard dumped the canister of silver liquid, which at once began to spread out, to swirl, to set the entire basin glowing eerie white. The old wizard's hand let go of Harry's arm and gestured to the glowing basin, commanding harshly,
Look!
As requested, Harry stared at the glowing water.
Put your head into the pensive Harry Potter.
The old wizard's voice was stern. Harry had heard that word before, but he couldn't remember where.
What does this do?
Memories, the old wizard said. You will see my memory. My oath that it is safe. Now, look into the pensive Ravenclaw, if you still care anything at all for your precious truth.
That was a request that Harry could not deny, and he stepped forward and thrust his head into the glowing water. Harry was sitting behind the desk in the headmaster's office of Hogwarts, and his wrinkled hands that clutched at his head were spotted with age and white hairs.
"He is all that I have,"
wept a voice. Very strange was Dumbledore's voice, as Dumbledore himself remembered it. From the inside, it seemed far less stern and wise.
"The last of my family. All that I have left."
No emotion had been allowed to pass through the pensive, only the physical sensation of seeming to speak the words. Harry heard the utter desolation in Dumbledore's words, the sounds that seemed to come from Harry's own throat, but Harry did not feel it beyond the hearing.
"You've got no choice," said a harsh voice.
The eyes moved. The field of vision jumped to a man that Harry didn't recognize, in clothing tinged with aura crimson, but made of solid leather with many pockets. His right eye was over-large, with an electric blue pupil that constantly darted and moved.
"You cannot ask this of me, Alistair!"
Dumbledore's voice was wild.
"Not this! Anything but this!"
"I'm not asking," growled the man. "Voldy's the one who's asking, and you're going to tell him no."
"For money, Alistair!"
Dumbledore's voice was begging.
"Only for money!"
"You ransom Aberforth, you lose the war," the man said sharply. "That simple. 100,000 galleons is nearly all we've got in the war chest, and if you use it like this, it won't be refilled. What'll you do? Try to convince the Potters to empty their vaults like the Longbottoms already did? Voldy's just going to kidnap someone else and make another demand. Alice, Minerva, anyone you care about, they'll all be targets if you pay off the Death Eaters. That's not the lesson you should be trying to teach them."
"If I do this, I will have no one. No one!"
Dumbledore's voice broke. The world tilted as the outlooking head fell down into the ancient hands, and awful sounds came from, not Harry's throat, as he began to sob like a child.
"Shall I tell Voldy's messenger no?" said Alistair's voice, now strangely gentle. "You don't have to do it yourself, old friend."
"No. I will say it myself. I must."
The memory ended with a shock, and Harry ripped his head out of the glowing water, gasping as though he'd been deprived of air. The transition between scenes, between decade-old reality and present moment, was another jolt to Harry's mind. In some fashion, his immersion in the past had unanchored him. The broken old man sobbing in his office had been another person in another era. Harry had understood that much.
someone softer. Before, it had all vanished like dissipating smoke, returning the now, the present day.
Terrible and stern stood the ancient wizard, like he was carven from stone. Beard woven of thread like iron, half-moon glasses like mirrors, and the pupils behind as sharp and unyielding as black diamond.
"Do you also wish to see my brother, as he died under the Cruciatus?" said Albus Dumbledore. "Voldemort sent me that memory as well."
"And that?"
Harry was having trouble producing a voice for the growing sickness in his chest.
"That was when..."
The word seemed to burn in his throat as the awful knowledge dawned on him. The horrible understanding.
"That was when you burned Narcissa Malfoy alive in her own bedroom."
Albus Dumbledore's gaze was cold as he answered.
"To that question, only a fool would say yea or nay. What matters is that the Death Eaters believe I killed her, and that belief kept safe the families of all who served the Order of the Phoenix until this day. Now, do you understand what you have done? What you have done to your friends, Harry Potter, and to any that stand with you?"
The old